This episode is brought to you by Sand Concepts. Smell your way to happiness with Sand Concepts. Sand Concepts is a fragrance house specializing in daily aromatherapy essentials to enhance and elevate your overall wellness. Their products include essential oil blends, diffusers, hand-poured candles, and sanitizers that are kept at pocket-friendly price. Their beautiful fragrance, Eclipse, Starlight, Twilight, and Moonlight, are sourced from France, and they are handcrafted by their in-house chemist that's bound to keep you feeling and smelling incredible all day. So what are you waiting for? Do go to www.scentconcepts.co to find out more. As we all know, credibility is a leader's currency. With it, he or she is solvent. Without it, he or she is bankrupt. Therefore, the great Harvey McKay once said, "Don't confuse visibility with credibility." But having this too is not enough, because humans are social animals. Scientists have shown that interaction with other humans improve our mental health, and social interactions are also important in business. We need other people for almost everything we do in the business world. Well, in this episode, we've invited a renowned business consultant best known for Billionaires in Boxes, and his name is none other than Phil Pelluccia. Phil is an internationally renowned celebrity entrepreneur, former professional athlete, and host of a top 5% podcast with more than 1 million downloads each month. He is exceptionally well-connected globally and is sought after for his ability to teach sport to business and business to sport. Often the intermediary for large-scale commercial and investment deals translating football into business and vice versa. Phil has connections with current and future business leaders as well as some of the best-known sports brands including, but not limited to, the Premier League, FIFA, UEFA, ECA, MLS, IOC, Barcelona Football Club, PSG, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Olympique Lyon, Juve, Bayern Munich, Atletico Madrid, and Porto. Well, this guy is famous for his ability to take your business from unknown to unrivaled, and his highly publicized long-term ambition is to own Liverpool FC. Well, without further ado, let's welcome this incredible entrepreneur into the house. Woo-hoo-ha! Hey, Phil.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
Good, man. How about you?
I'm good. I'm blessed. Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you're most welcome, man. I really love the, you know, Liverpool background.
Yeah.
Kenny Dalglish and Ian Rush in the back.
Two of Liverpool's greatest ever players. So it was that was my favorite ever Christmas gift, that picture. So it's the two signed jerseys. So Kenny Dalglish, in my opinion, is still Liverpool's greatest ever player since our inception in the 1800s. And Ian Rush to this day is still Liverpool's all-time leading goal scorer. And if I'm honest, I don't think he's going to be caught. I mean, we have some incredible players playing for us both now, and the likes of Mohamed Salah, and players gone by like Luis Suarez, who was scoring goals for fun. But yeah, I really don't see anybody getting close to Ian Rush's tally.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. I mean, even though I'm not a Liverpool fan, I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yeah. But, well, you're having a good season then.
Oh, yeah, man. Top in the league. 5 points ahead of Man City, but I hope we sustain this lead as long as possible and, you know, smash some goals in City's goalposts and all, rather than that 1-0 loss that we had. Yeah. Well, but you know, Liverpool is not that bad in this season as well. And even though, like, what we've mentioned earlier,
it's a mess this season. I think we're really struggling with a hangover from last season. I mean, last season we were in the final and came close to winning all four tournaments, the major tournaments. We won two trophies and fell just short of the two. We finished just second in the league, and we lost the Champions League final in Paris to Madrid. I hate Madrid. I hate them on the field. I like them as a club. I really hate playing against them, and we have to play against them again. Depending on when you're watching this, we have to play them again in a few weeks' time, which I'm not looking forward to. but we have a big hangover this season. We have one of the worst injury records. You know, our current owners are trying to sell the club, so investments really dried up, and everybody else. Mm-hmm. We were talking off air about the likes of Chelsea spending crazy amounts of money, and Liverpool are just sitting and watching this happen. And it doesn't feel like we're very much involved. I mean, as you're listening to this today, it is transfer deadline day that you are listening to this interview. And I don't think we're going to do anything. I mean, I might be proven wrong, but I think we're just going to watch the clock.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, Liverpool now is like not buying any other people except for one guy. And they are not in the transfer news at all. Most of the time, it's either Chelsea or
Arsenal. It's Chelsea every 5 minutes because Chelsea keep buying someone. Like every couple of minutes, Chelsea buys one. Do you know what it reminds me of? It kind of reminds me of when a kid plays FIFA and they have that unlimited transfer budget. That's what Chelsea are like at the moment. They're just like, we'll just buy everybody. It was kind of like, I don't know if you might be too young to remember, but it reminds me a little bit of when Abramovich first came into Chelsea and he just bought everybody. I mean, he bought Shevchenko, who was like one of the best strikers on the planet at the time, and left him on the bench for like two seasons.
Well, unfortunately, he wasn't on the level that he could be when he was in Milan back then. So,
it was a strange time.
Yeah, they bought good players.
They did.
Great players like Michael Essien.
Yeah,
and when they had Lampard in there as well, when they had people
Balak
like
Drogba.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ.
They are
just the best. And as a soccer fan, as an Arsenal fan, I feel bad for Arsenal buying a lot of the leftovers from Chelsea. David Lewis, Peter Cech, William Gallas as well. And I was like, huh, come on, man. We can be better than that.
Well, I think the strange thing for that was that doesn't really happen very much in the Premier League. Like, we tend not to sell to competitors. So that, for me...
Right.
I mean, clearly it's not the case anymore because Arsenal are doing fantastically well. But that, for me, at the time, said that Chelsea did not consider Arsenal to be a competitor because they were quite happy to sell them their players. And, you know, take the rivalry aside, you know, Arsenal would not sell their players to Spurs. Even if those players were done, it wouldn't happen. So the fact that they were prepared to do that meant that they didn't consider them a threat. And no disrespect to the club involved, but if we take Arsenal, would Arsenal sell players to Fulham or Crystal Palace? Yeah, probably, because they don't consider them to be a competitor. But they wouldn't sell them to Chelsea, they wouldn't sell them to Spurs, because they are competitors. So during that time, that for me just, I think, spoke volumes about how other top teams were perceiving Arsenal. But no, look, you've done well this season, and you deserve to be where you are. It must be great. Liverpool have had a number of seasons over the past few years that have been just as fun, and we've enjoyed them immensely. This season, not so much. I wish it was kind of over, to be honest. every game, it's like, oh, really? Another game? And I've watched every single Liverpool game for over three decades now. So there's no way I can miss a game. Even though I really wish I could at stages of this season. I mean, I'm like I said, I'm really not looking forward to the Real Madrid game. I'm not looking forward to it.
Well, crossing fingers, we hope that, you know, Liverpool will do well
in
these upcoming games. And of course, tonight we're not focusing so much on Premier League and UEFA Champions League, but more about entrepreneurship and yourself as well. Well, can you actually share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Of course, again. So I run three businesses. They're all under the brand of Billionaires in Boxes. One of them is an award-winning business consultancy. We've been ranked number one in the world now for the past 6 years at taking businesses from unknown to unrivaled. So I predominantly work with small and medium-sized businesses. I'm a David versus Goliath kind of guy, helping people get to the very top of their industry, as you said earlier, taking them from unknown to unrivaled. We have a sports consulting side of our business, as you alluded to as well, working with a lot of major brands and sports brands, sponsorships, merchandise, investment, finance, predominantly in terms of brokering major commercial deals. That's where I spend a lot of my time. And then the final one is our business television broadcast network. So we have three satellite television networks reaching 40 million homes
Wow.
worldwide. We have three global radio stations, and we have a top 5% podcast reaching 1 million downloads plus each month. That's been around for about 8 or 6, 8 or 8 years, 7 years, 8 years, something like that.
Wow. Okay. What does your podcast talk about? Is it about soccer, or is it
So
probably about entrepreneurship or something?
a bit of both, actually.
Oh.
I tend not to talk too much about the transfer market and kind of what's going on the field. Like, I mean, if it comes up in conversation, it comes up in conversation. But the podcast and a lot of my television content from our show, not from our client shows, but from our show, is often about teaching sports to business and business to sports. So one of the questions I like to ask when I'm doing sports interviews, for example, is it better to teach business to sports people or sports to business people?
Oh, I believe, in my opinion, it's easier to teach sports to business people than business to sports people.
Yeah. Do you know what? The reason I like that question is that everybody has their own opinion on it, but in reality,
Right.
I don't think there is an answer, because there have been times where we've taught sports to business people and it's worked really badly. There's other times when we've done that and it's worked incredibly well. But at the same time, you can say the reverse, which is sports people can learn business and do a good job. But there are plenty of people who've come from the world of sport, get to board level. I mean, you'll see a lot of commercial directors and directors of football are ex-players. That doesn't always work out that well, because all they know is sports. So there's never any new ideas coming in. I think the answer, actually, in my opinion, although it is just my opinion, is that actually you probably need both. You need a sports person who understands sports. They understand fan engagement. They understand the passion of the brand. And you can teach them sports, but you also need to bring in a sports, sorry, a business person who's very good commercially, is very good with finance, very good with raising business, very good with increasing profits, very good with increasing reach in commercial agreements, especially when it comes to sort of international rights and increasing visibility in new countries. That kind of globalization piece. But then they need to be taught sports, because, you know, if you take someone who's been very good at growing businesses internationally and put them in a sports club, they don't usually have 60,000 people shouting at them when they make a decision wrong. You know, and football is a very, very, it's a passionate sport. I mean, all sports is, but football in particular, soccer is a very passionate sport. And one of the things that I think a lot of people struggle with when they come from the world of business moving into that is that it's not their business. They're just the custodian of it. The club belongs to the fans. It does not, I don't care what the deed says, the club does not belong to you. It belongs to the fans, and you are there to manage it and do a good job as a custodian. But you don't have one boss. You have about a million bosses, depending on the size of your club, and everybody will have an opinion.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, if let's say you own Liverpool and I own Arsenal, I might have other businesses to run, and those are the things that I have to own, in a sense. I have to focus on instead of just the club itself. So that's why, it's not easy to actually be able to, just be managing this whole club. And doing the transfers and whatever not, and the branding of it, and even commercials with for the players and the managers, for example. Well, this takes a lot of effort and time.
Do you know what I think the hardest part of running a sports club is? You will never get it right. It's impossible. Because if getting it right is defined by everybody being happy, you will never have everybody happy. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So take Liverpool's current situation at the moment. We our owners are selling. A lot of fans are unhappy with the way that the owners are running the club at the moment. They appear to have lost all interest. There's a real mess going on behind the scenes, and that needs fixing. But here's the thing. When people were talking about like the Qatari investment fund coming in to invest in Liverpool, a lot of fans got excited because it was like, great, now we can spend money like City do, and we can spend money like Chelsea does, and we can grow, we can really throw some money behind this. But there was also a subsection of fans whose attitude was, well, we don't want that kind of money. It's against the ethics and morals of a socialist football club, which is predominantly what we have been. We don't want that. So it doesn't matter what happens. There will always be a section of fans who aren't happy with you and think that you have done the wrong thing. So I think the thing with football is you really have to be confident in your plan and execute it despite the noise. Because if you're trying to listen to fan opinion and public opinion, you're going to be changing your mind every 30 seconds because you're never going to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's why I said it's not easy to be an owner.
No, it's really not.
It's never easy. Like, you want to buy a player, you need your scouts to go there to scout the players. You need your coach to actually give you the assessment after that and all this other stuff. Well, it takes a toll of time.
And it does.
Can you imagine if the owner is in love with this club and always wanted to, you know, improve this club, but behind the scenes, you do not know what the hell is going
on. It's a mess. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, look, I'll share this as well. It's not just football. This is business in general. I mean, if you look at an entrepreneur, they love their business. This is their baby. This is something that they have created. But the amount of entrepreneurs who change what they're doing every 5 minutes because they speak to someone who says, oh, no, that's not a good idea. You shouldn't be doing that. Try this. I mean, I talk a lot with my clients, and every time I speak to them, they come to me with different answers. They're like, but this person said I need to do email marketing, and this person said I should do Facebook ads, and this person said that I should do this, and this person said that I should do more one-on-ones, and this person said that I should do masterminds. And it's like there's so much contradicting information out there that you often need somebody to just help you cut through the noise and say, look, here is a formula that is working. Let's design a business based around your superpowers, what you are good at. Let's focus on that. Let's delegate things that need to be delegated. Let's hire people that need to be hired and make partnerships with people who need to be partners so that you can focus on the thing that you're best at. But trying to listen to everybody else and reading a load of business books and trying to implement this into your business, people just end up in a mess. They end up spending a lot of money. They waste a lot of time. And you know what? This might sound a bit controversial. As somebody who runs three very successful businesses, business is easy. Business is overcomplicated by idiots. And like people just trying to find things to complicate it. But inherently, business is incredibly simple. You have a skill. Somebody needs that skill. You sell them that skill. Or you have a product. Somebody needs that product. They buy the product. And then we go all around the houses to get there. Whereas the mantra that I often ask myself is, what is the easiest route to money? What is the easiest route to money? And the easiest route to money is often know what my superpower is, know who needs that superpower, find a way of introducing those two things together. Problem solved. Yep.
True. Whoa. Nice. Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with you on this, man. I mean, In business, it's not easy, like we mentioned it earlier.
Yep.
And there's a ton of things that we have to do.
Yep.
And can you imagine the amount of passion that you have for this business starts to go down the drain because of, you know, so much losses, bad customer reviews, be it you're in the F&B business or any coaching business, for example, and all these are detrimental for you and your mental health. And that's why today we have you to actually share a lot of stuff, a lot of golden nuggets with our audience later on as well. And you know, before we actually dive into the main focus of our interview, our listeners would love to know more about you. And can you tell us a bit about your backstory and how did you become a celebrity entrepreneur?
So I was a former professional athlete. And then I got medically retired in my early 20s and went into coaching. And I really hated coaching. Coaching football, I really disliked it. I describe it as it was being like a recovering alcoholic trying to manage a bar. You know, I wanted to be on the field. I didn't want to be on the side of the field, and I needed that clean break away from the sport. I needed to go in and define myself. But I took that winning mentality and that drive that had taken me to the level of, you know, beating millions of people to the game and being able to be the one who got the professional contract. And I took that into the world of business. So I'm a serial winner. I like to work with serial winners. I like people who have that winning mentality. One of the parts of the equation that was missing, though, was my business knowledge. So I went away and I got 3 degrees and started working with some large brands. And I worked at corporate level for some of the largest real estate brands in the world. For example, I got to work with the likes of Microsoft Asia on their HoloLens project and working with their sports and entertainment brands via them. But ultimately, I then grew and sold 2 professional services businesses. So I sold an executive search firm and I sold a marketing consulting firm. And I didn't have enough money to retire. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was just going to take a break, actually. And then people started to come to me and say, well, how did you get that TV show? And how did you win that client? And how did you get that partner? And how did you get that keynote speaking gig? And I got so tired of telling them that I met those people through networking, through my content, through the television, through the podcast, that I just started to teach people how to do it. And the intention was I was only going to teach people for a very short amount of time. I was just going to teach some friends and family how to do it, and then I was going to go do something else. Well, fast forward 10 years later, I now have the number one agency in the world teaching people how to do this for the past 6 years. And it's been a lot of fun. But, you know, I think when you mentioned, like, how do you get to that celebrity status, let me tell you something. I was ranked number one in the world before I was number one in the world. So let me explain.
Oh. Whoa, okay.
I was brought on stage to do a keynote talk, and the person introduced me as number one in the world. He said, Phil is the number one person in the world at this. And that wasn't true. I wasn't the number one person in the world at this. That was just their opinion. But then I got a press write-up about that speech, and they quoted him by saying, Phil is number one in the world. Right? So now I've got it said in front of an audience of people in the industry, and now it's written in a magazine and a newspaper. So a few months later, somebody in the States is doing a top 10 list, and they're looking for evidence of top 10, and they find this newspaper article in Asia saying Phil is ranked number one in the world at this. So then they put me as number one on their list. So now I've got been number one on the stage, been number one in the newspaper, been number one on the top 10 list, and now I suddenly start getting people coming to me giving me awards because I'm number one in this space.
And this is
what I talk about with perception beats perfection. It's more important what people see and think about you than how well it actually runs in the background. I know so many successful business owners who you look at them. I promise you, you've got a bookshelf behind you. You will have their book on your shelf. I promise you. Right. And their business is a mess. Right. You look behind the scenes and it is absolute chaos. But you're reading their words going, this person's brilliant. This person's a genius. It's because they know how to use their superpower. But then everything else is on fire in the background. It's a complete mess. We pull back that curtain and it looks like a bomb's hit it. You're like, what on earth is this business? Right. So perception beats perfection, because it's more important what people say and think about you than it is how well the actual business is running. But that's a problem that a lot of people have, is that they say things like, well, I'm not ready to do that talk yet, or I'm not ready to get media attention yet, or I'm not ready to go and put myself out there to the world yet, because the business isn't running perfectly. Well, they're the people who go broke trying to get perfect, because perfect doesn't exist. I can honestly tell you, every single time I'm in one of those keynote speakers rooms just before we go on stage and there's 10 to 15 industry leaders in there, every single person in there is nervous. Every single person in there feels like a fraud. Every single person in there is thinking, listen, I'm about to put a spotlight on all the cracks in my business. Every single person. So the only difference between the people who are the celebrities in their industry and the people who are sat at home wishing they were the celebrities in their industry is that one didn't let the fear stop them and the other one has let the fear hold them still.
Okay. Yeah, totally. I mean, the last time I had one guest from 10X Stage Agency as well, he was telling me about, you know, how a lot of people in the speaking industry back then was like broke.
True.
He was the top among all those people who were broke, but he was top in terms of the amount that he earns as compared to the rest that were you know, earning pennies. Like, oh wow, they look great on stages, but then behind the scenes, oh, they are finding it hard to actually sell their causes, sell sell the stages, for example, and things like that.
It's what I call leveraged credibility, right? So a lot of people will speak on a stage knowing that they're probably not going to sell that much to the audience and they're not going to get that many sales from stage. But the fact that they then repurpose and market the fact that they were on that stage is what allows them to attract customers. So I'll give you a great example of this. This is part of our broadcast business. So I have my satellite television network and I have a show on that network, naturally. It airs across Africa and Asia. Well, my key market is not Africa and Asia. That's not where my audience are. It's more of a philanthropic deed that we're giving so much content because we don't charge for the content when we're giving it to the viewers. It's just here it is, watch it. And it's incredibly insightful. Some of the people that you're getting to see on interviews are the people that you would see of the caliber of like Mastermind or Masterclass.com or maybe even going to university. Like, you're not going to learn this stuff through a textbook. You're going to learn this by listening to an interview with somebody who's at the top of their game. And we don't charge for this. But here's the thing. My business is several million dollars better off because of that TV show. Not because I sell to the people who watch the TV show in Africa and Asia, but the fact that when I'm winning my clients in my key market of North America, the Middle East, and a little bit of Australia, my customers are impressed because even if they're looking at 10 of my competitors, I'm the only one who has 40 million reach, a top 5% podcast, and a million downloads each month. So I'm leveraging the credibility of the fact that I'm saying, look at what I have, right? Think about in your shoes. So I talk to this is what we actually do for our clients. We put them on our network and give them the same thing. So how many people do, and your audience can follow along with this question as well. How many people do what you do in your industry? I'm guessing quite a few. You've always got competitors, always. Mm-hmm. I'm an SEO coach, I'm a marketing coach. Great. How many of those are there in your city? Never mind worldwide, right? There's so many of these people. And you can talk about, well, this is what makes me special. But unless you're really good at marketing your superpower so that your audience can tell what makes you different to other people, you're in trouble because there's so many competitors, there's so much competition. But here's the thing. If you're the one who, of all of those people who has a TV show and a satellite television network reaching 40 million homes, your podcast gets aired on a podcast network that's top 5% and reaches a million people on downloads, and you're on the streaming channels, and you can invite that person on your show for free. So invite your ideal customers on a show completely for free to build a relationship with them and get to know them. Now you're in an audience of one, because I don't care how many people are in your industry. How many of those have a reach to 40 million homes, million plus downloads on a podcast? I'm guessing not many, if any. You're probably now in an audience of just you. So for a lot of people, the problem comes down to the fact that they are their industry's best kept secret, that nobody knows about them. If more people knew that they existed, they would want to do business with them. So what we do with both our coaching and with the broadcast network is we are the stage and the spotlight. We're going to shine a spotlight on you. We're going to give you the microphone. We're going to put you on stage and we're going to make sure that the world knows that you exist, which is why with a lot of our clients, the first thing that we end up doing is defining their superpower so they know what the hell they're saying when they get on stage, and defining their offerings so that they're offering something that their audience actually wants. Because if we have those two ingredients and now shine a spotlight on you, as has been proven by the fact that we're number one for the past 6 years, it produces tremendous results. But so many people are going broke doing this the hard way, and they are remaining their industry's best kept secret. And that's a real shame to see.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. I like what you have mentioned earlier on how you actually can shine spotlight on these people and teach them how to say what to say and, you know, make themselves shine bright like a diamond in a sense in their feel and also in their expertise as well, right?
Definitely.
So yeah, so okay. Well, and what's the name of your network channel?
So at the moment it's under Billionaires in Boxes, but it's being rebranded to Palucha TV on the TV side. Streaming will remain Billionaires in Boxes, and the podcast is Billionaires in Boxes and Billionaires in Boxes Global are the two podcasts.
Oh, okay. Wow, nice. Okay, well, later on, I'm going to ask you more about Billionaires in Boxes.
Yeah,
it sounds really interesting and very catchy as well.
Thank you.
And And just want to ask you, right, you know, while you are actually building your business up, I'm pretty sure you have made some mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
You have some failures, right? So just want to ask, do you have a favorite failure of yours? And how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for a later success?
That's a good question. So the first thing that I would say is I don't think I see them as failures anymore. I think I did at one stage, but now I really don't. I see it as I either earn or I learn. You can't be afraid of failures, because being afraid of failure is also being afraid of success. And then you stand still. And, you know, a great example of this is we've all heard stories of, you know, multimillionaires who go bankrupt. And then 6 months later, they have another business and they're a millionaire again. And you're like, wait, didn't they just go broke like 2 weeks ago? Like, what happened? Like, they were bankrupt 6 months ago and now they're a success again. Well, here's what happened. They know what step 1 through 20 looks like and how it works. They took step 21 and they went bankrupt. They made a mistake. So what they do now is they quickly get back to step 20 and then they take different action next time they take step 21, because now they know what doesn't work. And now they get to 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Business goes bust again. Well, now they can get back to 25 really quickly because they know what that looks like. And when it gets to step 26, they're going to take different actions again. So I think provided you're... there's a saying that I really like, which is you're going to fall. Just make sure you fall forward. And I really like that. So provided you keep falling forward, you're going to get to your destination. But the thing that stops most businesses is not failure. The thing that stops most businesses is fear of failure. So they just don't take the action. They just don't put themselves out there. They don't do the things that could really set them apart because they're afraid of, well, what if it doesn't work? But at the same time, what if it does? You know, a lot of people will take the negative approach and say, well, what if I take this chance and it doesn't work? Well, what if it does?
Yeah.
What if it does? Right. So the very first network I ever got involved in is a great example. It cost me like $300,000. And I think it was the most money I'd ever spent on any particular thing at that particular point. I've just bought another one now for another $500,000. But that one was $300,000. It was the most money I'd ever spent. I didn't even know what I was going to do with it. I just knew it was a big opportunity and that I could do something great with it. So I bought it, right? And I remember people saying to me, what if it doesn't work? You've just lost 300 grand. And I kept saying to people, yeah, but what if it does work and it makes $3 million? Right? So the what if argument doesn't help. What if is irrelevant. I'm going to take the action anyway. But I will tell you this. You want to know a mistake I've made that I learned something from and a lot from. It was earlier in my career, but it's one that really stung. And actually, it really, really hurt. So I took on a project with a client. And essentially, it was me and a small team. And it was when I had my marketing consultancy. And we took on this project with this client. And it was such a big project that they were the only client I had capacity for. I couldn't work with anybody else because this client was taking up all of my time. But it was okay because it was paying really well. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then about 2 weeks before Christmas, the company goes bust.
Oh, like, shit.
Finished. Okay. And I found out because some of the people I know that work there rang me up and said, why is the office locked? We can't get in. They were locked outside. And it turns out that salaries didn't get paid to people. And bearing up, this is 2 weeks before Christmas. So salaries were late. They didn't get paid to people at all. And in total, so there was two payments. There was a larger payment that was outstanding, but that wasn't due at the time. The payment that was due at the time to me was £80,000. So about $95,000.
Whoa.
And I lost that overnight. Gone. Right. Then I had the fact that I was owed £100,000, so about $120,000 in January, which obviously also didn't turn up. So about £200,000, about $250,000 I lost in the space of 2 months. And not only did I lose that, I still had to pay the salaries of my people because they'd done the work.
Right.
So then I paid that. So that was another $20,000-$30,000 just to pay my team because they couldn't struggle. And I was broke. Like, I had no money. I was in so much trouble. And when I say no money, like, when I say I have no money now, like, there's usually still loads in savings, right? When I say I had no money then, I mean, like, I was in my overdraft limit. I had no money, right? And right. I have a family. I have two small children. They were both very young at the time. I think I'm not sure the baby was born actually. She probably wasn't. She's six now. So it probably would have been me, my wife, and my daughter. And okay. I had no money. And I had to take out a credit card just to be able to pay for some Christmas presents and Christmas dinner. And my wife and I didn't exchange gifts for each other that year because we didn't have the money to do it. So we just wanted to make sure that my daughter had presents and that she had a nice Christmas. And we had just enough money to get some Christmas dinner through the door. And it was all on a credit card. I was then broke and had to pay that back. And it wasn't a good credit card either with like 0% interest. It was like, I don't know, 30% APR or something ridiculous on this credit card. So it wasn't nice, damn. Right? This is painful.
Whoa, okay.
And yeah, because it's December, January, this is the worst time for trying to win new clients, right? Because no one's even back in the office until like second week of January. So right. I'm now like, I need to go and find some new clients quickly because I've still got to pay salaries again at the end of January. And if I don't do that now, like I'm going to have to find money from somewhere, borrow money from somebody else to pay my team. And I don't know where this ends. Like this could completely collapse everything. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was I won a handful of clients in January, and by the skin of our teeth, we managed to survive. And then by about March, April time, we were in a really good place again. Here's the big thing I learned from that lesson. Do not put all of your eggs in one basket. Don't do it. Do not do it. It is better to have five clients paying you $1 million than one client paying you $10 million. I promise you. Do not do it. It's so scary when it goes wrong. It's great while it's working. It's great while it's working. It was like, I don't have to win any clients. We've always got money in the bank. Everything's great. Company goes bust, doesn't pay my invoice. I was so far down the pecking order as well when they went insolvent that I don't think I got anything back from it at all. And that was months and months later. If I did, we're talking like a couple of $1,000s maybe at most. I don't think I got anything back from this. It just went so badly. And from that point on, one of the things that I realized was I not only had made a mistake, I had done something which when I look back on it was really stupid. And that was when I left the corporate world, people used to say to me, like, this is really risky. It's really scary. Like, you know, aren't you scared? Like, you're giving up a salary and the car and the pension. And I used to say to them, what's riskier, working with one person who gives you one salary or working with 10 clients so that if I lose one, I just go and replace another one, right? Mm-hmm. And that was always my defense back. So I would say that to people. And I would say, so in my mind, it's riskier to have a full-time employed job than it is to be an entrepreneur. Because as an entrepreneur, I can always just go win more clients and help more people. You know, if that company that I worked for went bust, there would have been 10,000 people looking for a job all at the same time in the same city. That's risk. Mm-hmm. That's not good. Right. So, but then what I'd done is I had become self-employed, grown my own team, grown a business, and then gone and worked with that one client again and increased the risk massively all over again. So I knew the mistake and then I did it anyway. And when I look back on it, I think the two things that taught me were, number one is never put all your eggs in one basket. That's a big one. And I think everyone's heard that, but it's only when you first experience it that you go. So I'm really hoping that the people listening and watching this will learn from my mistakes so that you don't have to go to the painful place that I went to learn that. Because it's painful, right? I felt like such a failure. That whole Christmas was like the worst period of my life. I had that big lump in my throat the whole Christmas. It was horrible. And I often think about that moment. When I'm making decisions, I think about that moment. And I say, does that get me closer to that feeling again or further away from that feeling again? And I will always take the decision that takes me further away from that. There's point number one. Mm-hmm. Point number two is follow your gut instinct. I had a bad feeling about that client from the start and I did it anyway.
Okay.
I did it because it was financially really rewarding. So okay. I let my head overrule my heart. My head was saying, it's millions of dollars, take it. My heart was going, there's something dodgy about this guy. I do not like this person. I can't tell you why, but I don't trust them. And as soon as I found out that that's what had happened and they'd gone bust and they didn't pay salaries and they didn't pay me, I instantly went back to that feeling right straight away again. And there was almost like this little internal voice that went, told you so. I told you not to trust him. And that was really painful. So I use that as a barometer to make more decisions with my heart and less with my head. If my head is in agreement, then fantastic. But I will, if it's ever a decision between my head and my heart wins every time.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like, whenever you want to make a leap of faith to something, you definitely have to use your gut. But of course, if you don't feel good about it, then it does show that it's not worth it in a sense. Nope. It might have a lot of risk over there as well. Yeah,
you're so right. I've never had an occasion where I've gone against my gut and it's worked out well. Never. Right. Whenever, so I've had this at times when I've ignored my gut and then pushed on, and it's worked out really badly. But I've never had a time when I've ignored my gut and it's worked out well. But at the same time, I've never regretted a decision that I've made with my heart. Even if I could have made more money, even if I could have done something bigger, even if it was like, oh, look, you could have been here, you could have done this. I've never regretted it because I made the decision that I felt was right, and I stand by that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like for example, recently I was invited to 10X Growth Con by Grant Cardone's 10X Stage Agency. So they asked me to actually be a VIP judge. And the ironic thing is that their timing over there was 10 a.m. PST all the way to 1 p.m. PST, which is like Singapore's time of like 1-2 a.m. I told myself, man, I have to go for it. I'm given this opportunity of a lifetime to be a part of this thing. Just go and do it. Heck it. My gut feeling tell me just go ahead. I'm glad that, you know, Pete Vargas actually emailed me twice to confirm with me that, hey, did I receive this email? At first I thought it was just some email marketing stuff and spam mail with everyone in their email list. But then he actually returned a mail back to me. Hey, Rayson, did you see this email? If you have, just reply to me. Thank you and all this other stuff, all these formalities. I'm like, okay, I know this is the time. This is the thing that I should be going. And well, I'm really grateful, you know, to be a part of this, and it's going to be on February. So you guys stay tuned for 10X Growth Con 2023. Regacy will be there. The Regacy show, I mean, the Regacy brand itself will be there. Will be shown. Yeah, so
that's awesome, dude. Do you know what? The universe, whether you believe in God, the universe, whatever, we don't have to go religious with this, but there is ultimately some guiding force, right? And one of the things that I often think is the universe puts people into our lives when we're supposed to meet them. It's when you have like a relationship with somebody and then you meet your new partner years later and you go, why couldn't I have met you 10 years ago? It's because you weren't ready for them 10 years ago, right? You meet somebody when you're supposed to meet them. Everything happens for a reason. And our only guiding force with that is our gut instinct and our intuition to decide whether that's a good thing that's in front of us or whether it's a test that life has put in front of us. And we have to make that decision using our gut instinct. I'm a big believer in that. And you know what? That's the other thing, is that the universe, God, whatever we want to say, has a much bigger and better plan for you than you have. So yeah. This is why it's also good to use your intuition and make more decisions with your heart, because your head can only make decisions based on the knowledge that it has right now. So let me give you a great example with this, right? Because I often use this about talking to other people. If you ask five of your friends right now, you know, can I make $1 million US a month? I imagine all five of them are going to go, no. Like, that's a lot of money, dude. There's no, like, what are you going to do? Like, sell organs? Like, what? How's this going to work, right? But if you were to ask five multimillionaires or billionaires, can I make $1 million this month? They're going to go, yeah, you can make it this week. Of course you can, right? If I ask five of my friends, can I have a Ferrari this year? They're going to tell me no. But if I ask five Ferrari owners, can I own a Ferrari this year? They'll all say yes. Yeah, of course you can. Absolutely. What's the difference? The difference is they have achieved it, so they know how to do it. So from their perspective, it is completely possible and achievable because they're currently living it. So why would it be seen as impossible? Whereas to somebody who's never done it, they see it as impossible. There's a very famous Nelson Mandela quote that says, everything seems impossible until it's done.
Yeah.
Right. And business is exactly the same. So not only do you have to surround yourself with people who are the people that you want to be, it's like that saying, you know, if you surround yourself with 5 millionaires, you're going to be the sixth one. Right. Because you get to learn from these people. But it's understanding that when life gives you an opportunity like that one that has been put in front of you, you have to use your instinct and say, is this something that I should be doing? Because if you work that out logically, you might be going, well, not really. I mean, it's 2 a.m. I don't really want to be awake at 2 a.m. I'm going to be really tired the next day. I might even get a flu because I'm not sleeping properly. So then I'll be ill for a week and that's probably not great. And then I lose money. So logically, this doesn't sound like a good idea. But your gut instinct was saying, yes, this is an opportunity. Grab it with both hands. Take it. So the person who makes decisions with their head is saying, thank you, but no, thank you. That's in the middle of the night for me. The person who's making the decision with their heart is going, hell yeah, sign me up.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So that's why for those of you who are tuning in, don't just use your brains, but also use your heart, because these two are always linked together. So you need this to help you out with your decisions in your own future and success as well. So
completely agree.
So listen to what Phil has mentioned and practice on that. All right. And Phil, I just want to ask you, right, if you could have a gigantic billboard with anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Oh, I like that question. It would have two words.
Two words.
Invite yourself.
Invite yourself. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Why invite yourself, man?
So I find so many people who are waiting to be discovered, right? They're waiting for somebody to recognize them and say, hey, you're great. We should put you on stage, or we should put you on TV, or hey, do you want to meet Oprah, or here's Richard Branson. Let me make an introduction. And they're all waiting to be introduced to these people or to these opportunities. Mm-hmm. They're almost waiting for an invitation to level up their life, to achieve something bigger, to achieve something greater. I often talk about being invited to the cool kids table in school, right? You're waiting for the invitation to come and eat lunch with the cool kids. And that's not how that works. It doesn't work that way. You have to invite yourself. So if we take the example of, let's say, Oprah, right? Oprah's television show. You want to be on Oprah. There's only two ways to get on Oprah. And I don't care what anybody tells you. There's two ways every single time. Number one, you pay someone a lot of money to introduce you. Number two, you strategically network with people to get yourself invited. If you're not doing one of those two things, paying somebody to introduce you or doing the networking strategically to get yourself invited, you are never going to be on that show. They are never going to pick up the phone and be like, hey, I just thought this was you. Think about this in a different setting, right? If you're wanting a relationship, staying at home the whole time isn't going to help. No one's going to knock on the door and be like, hey, are you single? Like, maybe we should go out. Like, that's not how this works. That'd be the weirdest conversation in the world. And even if they did, you wouldn't trust them. You'd be like, who's this weirdo? Right? You'd think you're being pranked or something. So you have to invite yourself. So you have to get strategic with, okay, so if everybody agrees with this statement, and I imagine most people, if not all people, will, it's better to be famous for 50 of the right people than 5 million of the wrong people. It's better to be famous for 50 of the right people than 5 million of the wrong people. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. And this reminds me of what this guy, Ray Higdon, who came on my podcast, he said he learned something from Grant Cardone, and he paid $100,000 to this guy to learn this. And the thing is this, it's better to be best known than being the best.
Correct. That's exactly. So that's essentially when he says that's what I mean when I say perception beats perfection. It's more important what people see and think about you than how well things actually work. Right.
Yeah.
So he's absolutely right. But here's the thing. When I say that to people about that, it's better to be famous for 50 of the right people than 5 million of the wrong people. Everybody always agrees. Everybody always goes, yeah, definitely. And then I say to them, so who are the 50 people for you? And they go, oh, I don't know. It's like, right, so...
Okay.
So we've just established that it's better to be famous for 50 of the right people than 5 million of the wrong people, but you have no idea who those 50 people are. Doesn't that show you a problem? Right? You're currently creating content to put out on social media to get more followers. You're currently trying to do sales calls. You're currently trying to get partners. You're trying to get on stages. You're trying to get media coverage. You're creating podcast content. You're creating television content. Why, if you have no idea how to put it in front of the 50 people you're trying to meet? That makes no sense. So mm-hmm. you agree with me that you need to be known by those 50 people, but you have no idea who those 50 people are. That's insane. It's like you acknowledge the fact and then carry on walking around blindly. That makes no right. sense to me. So it's like, okay, so invite yourself is let's get clear on that list of 50 people. Some of those 50 will be clients. Some of those 50 will be partners. Some of those 50 will be investors. Some of those 50 will be mentors. Some of those 50 will be friends and family. But if mm-hmm. you don't know who those 50 are, how the hell are we supposed to design a strategy for you to meet them?
Right.
And more importantly, how are you going to know when you reach your destination? Because you don't even know what they look like. You might be meeting these people and then saying no to them because you haven't identified it. You know, it might be saying, I've met the love of my life, but I've said no because I'm looking at business right now, not love. Oh, so just let them go then. Okay, no problem. There's the love of your life. Game over. Well done. You've just missed the opportunity. Life brought those two moving pieces together, and instead of following your heart, you went with your head and went, oh no, I'm busy on work right now. That can go away. Oh, well, that was genius. Well done. And then these are the same people that go, why do I never get a break? Why does nothing good ever happen to me? It's like, because you keep ignoring it. Like, you're ignoring right. what's being put in front of you. And again, whether you believe in God or manifestation or affirmations or whatever, you know, what's that saying? Where your focus goes, energy flows.
Yes.
Right? Right. So right. if your focus is on meeting those 50 of the right people because you have the list, the energy goes into meeting 50 of those right people. And just two of them could be that ticket that takes you to achieve mooring in your life and in your business than you ever thought was possible. But you're not getting any step closer to it because you're just flying around blindly going, I'm going to try this for a bit. And maybe I should try some email marketing. And maybe I could try Facebook ads. And hey, should I do TikToks? And you're just so scatterbrained that you're just trying all these different things and wondering why it's not working. And this is what I said to you earlier. Business is incredibly simple. It's overcomplicated by idiots. Business is simple.
Yep.
Let's make a list of the 50 people that I need to know to grow my business. Let me think about law of reciprocity. What can I give to each of those 50 people that they want to reward me in return with the thing that I want and need for my life and my business? And that, in my world, is often how we use the television, the broadcasting. That's why I give my clients access to the broadcast network so that they have their own television show, the 40 million homes, top 5% podcast, million downloads, because now they can use that platform to go to their 50 and say, I want to give you free publicity for your business in return for exploring how we might be able to do some business together. I want to get to know you. Let's see if we can help each other. And honestly, life changes. As soon as you become deliberate with the actions you're taking, life changes.
So true, man. So true. When you are, you know, using your heart more than just your brain itself, mm-hmm. you definitely will get to where you want. And correct. You most likely will make the better decisions than the wrong ones that definitely. You might think that, you know, fail and all this other stuff.
Rayson, here's the thing, and I think you'll like this, right? One of the reasons you need to use your heart is even once you've built that 50 list, you won't know the person's name necessarily. You will know what they look mm-hmm. like or the kind of personality that they are or the kind of things that they have, right? So let's say that I want to sell my media business. So what I want to do is I want to meet somebody who has grown and sold a broadcasting network. So I don't know mm-hmm. what that could be Rupert Murdoch, that could be whoever, right? But I know what that person looked like. It looks like this. But here's the thing. I'm going to go start trying to meet those people. How do I know when I've met the one I'm supposed to work with? Because there might be 10 people that meet that criteria. How do I know which one I'm supposed to do the business with? If I'm only using my head, logic says that, well, all 10 have done it, so any of them are fine. But that's mm-hmm. not true, is it? Because How many of those 10 should I not be anywhere near? How many of those 10 won't resonate with me as a person? How many of those 10 are just trying to use me instead of trying to help me because there's no relationship there? I have to use my heart to make that decision. And a great example of this would be, you know, think back to high school, right? When you were in school. What percentage of your class were douchebags?
Probably 30%.
Right. So I usually hear about 30 to 50%, there or thereabouts, right? Well, those people graduated and they went off into the big wide world. And if every school and every class all over the world had 30 to 50% of the class were douchebags, logic tells you that 30 to 50% of the population are douchebags.
Unfortunately,
so,
right.
Correct. So if I'm now looking at, I want to find, using the example I just gave, I want to find one of my 50 is a broadcast partner, someone who's grown a broadcast business and sold it. And I find 10 of those people. 3 to 5 of those 10 are douchebags. How do I know if I'm only using this? If I'm only using my head and my brain, how do I know that? I don't, is the answer. I have to use my gut. I have to use my heart. I have to do the, I get a good feeling from this person and a really bad feeling from this person. That's all you have to go off. And that's what you have to use. You have to trust that little voice inside you, that intuition, that gut feeling, whatever it is that you recognize in each person. For some people, it's a voice. For some people, it's a lump in their stomach. For some people, it's a lump in their throat. For other people, it's like a cold sweat. For other people, they get like the shivers. It's like, ugh, a person gives me the creeps, right? And you can't even work out why. You just, like, whenever you see them, you're like, ugh, I don't like that person, right? Trust that feeling. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them as a human. It means that they're not your person. That's your inner barometer saying to you, wrong way, not that way. That's not for you. So you have to recognize that if 30 to 50% of the population are the douchebags that graduated your high school class that you don't like, you have to use your gut feeling to figure out who you should and shouldn't be working with. Not just for partners, but for clients as well. It's, I mean, think about it. Right. It's always that client who you ignore the gut feeling and you work with them that ends up being the biggest pain in the backside as a client. Every time. We've all worked with people that we really wish we hadn't bothered. And when we look back, if we're honest with ourselves, we usually go, I knew there was something wrong with that person. I knew, you know, I knew that deal wasn't going to work. Or, I took the money and I didn't even want to help them, but I did it for the cash. And now it's, you know, I made $100,000 from it and got a $1 million headache. Great. what a great idea that was.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, man. I mean, like, you know, when you are, how do I put it? When you have that $100,000 of idea, but then you're getting yourself $1 million of headache in terms of debts and you know, bad stuff, bad attitude and all this other stuff. Oh, it is gonna be a pain in the butt for you. Yeah, and definitely. Not just for you, but your family will be affected, your employees will be affected and all this other stuff. So it's like a chain effect. And once you are affected and they are affected, you will have a huge poisonous cycle that you'll be in.
And it's very difficult to get out of as well. I mean, I was having a conversation with a new client of mine the other day, and we were talking about this plan, and we found this thing that is his superpower. He's amazing at it, and he's not currently teaching it. So I said, so we need to start winning clients and teaching people. And he said, I can't. I said, why not? He said, because I'm too busy dealing with all those other clients. I was like, right, so you're so busy doing the stuff that you don't want to do, you don't have time for the stuff that you do want to do. He's like, yeah. I was like, so what are you going to do? He's like, well, I'm just going to have to keep working with them. I was like, that's a terrible idea. It's like, we've just worked out. It's like, that way is the wrong way, but and this way is the right way, but I haven't got time to go the right way right now because I'm too busy going the wrong way. It's like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, stop going the wrong way. Let's turn around and let's go the right way. Like, the logic behind this, I need to keep walking down this wrong path because I've already started now, is crazy. It's like, if we establish that you're heading the wrong way, the best thing to do is stop, take stock, understand the right way, and start heading that way. It's as simple as that. See what I mean? Business is simple, overcomplicated by ideas.
Well, that proves a point, especially your new client was saying that, hey, I have this idea, but then I'm not using it because I have to deal with the previous person who is giving me a headache.
Right. I'm just gonna keep having a headache. It's like, why do I have a headache? Well, I keep smashing myself in the head with a hammer. It's like, well, stop hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. It's like, I would, but I'm busy hitting myself in the head with a hammer right now. It's like, what? That makes no sense. Just stop hitting yourself.
Yeah, it just makes me think of Homer Simpson.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, just stop hitting yourself. And you know what? This client, we've got him on the right path now. He's working on some great stuff. There will be a period of transition where we have to get him to put down the wrong stuff so that he has more time to pick up the right stuff. It's not just like he can turn one thing off and turn the other thing on. That's quite often the case with people. There has to be a transition. But at least we now know we're heading in the right direction. And now when he's turning up to these clients that he doesn't want to be working with, he's not thinking, why am I doing this? I hate this. He's thinking, great, I'm one more hour closer to putting that person down so that I can focus more time on what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. Wow. Love it. Love it. I'm looking forward to hear more from you, you know, about this client of yours who actually made it after this period of transition.
Oh, they will. They'll crush it. I mean, we have such a great track record with this. I mean, we've done this hundreds and hundreds of times now, and every single person thinks that they have a unique problem, and they don't. Everybody has the same problem. Everybody has the same secrets. It's just putting a formula in place that works and taking the action to get there. And that's what I love about what we do, is that I started doing this because I enjoyed people telling me how much better their business does, right? Let me tell you one of the things that I enjoy the most about this now. Often, after we've worked together for not even that long, maybe 6 months, people stop telling me about how well business is going, and they start telling me about how much their life has changed. They start saying things to me like, I only work 2 days a week now. Do you know that? And my wife's so much happier with me. Or I now get to read my daughter a bedtime story every night because I'm no longer stressed about having to go and do this thing. Or, you know what? I had a guy the other week message me and was like, I'm changing cell phone numbers. Here's my new number. And I was like, why are you changing cell phone numbers? And he's like, oh, this number doesn't work in Peru. And I was like, what the hell are you doing in Peru? And he was like, I've always just wanted to be here. So I've just moved here for 8 months, and now I'm going to work out here instead. This is a guy who 12 months ago, when I spoke to him, was like, I'm working 6 days a week. I never sleep. I drink like 15 cups of coffee a day. I hate my business. My marriage is in the toilet. Like, everything's a mess. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I've spent all this money with coaches and nothing seems to be working. I've wasted all my money. I'm scared about spending more money. This is a mess. Fast forward 12 to 18 months later, he now works 2 days a week, has a great team, great business, happy marriage, happy family. And he's buggered off to Peru to go and live there for 8 months because that's where he wants to be. That means more to me than somebody saying, hey, Phil, I've just made another sale. Like, it's the results are great, but why are we doing the results? Like, what's the point? Like, helping you make $1, $2, $5, $10, $15, $20 million, fine, but what for? Why are we doing that? Are we doing that just because you want $20 million in the bank? Or are we doing that because it changes your relationships and your dynamics and you can now be a better husband, father, wife, mother, you know, to your partner? Is it because you are philanthropic in nature, and the more you have, the more you can help? So yes, you're making money, but you're also elevating your community. What's the deeper meaning behind why we're doing this? Because if we don't know that, what's the point?
Right.
What's the point?
I agree. Yeah, because when you do not have a specific target and you know, a purpose behind it, the more it will be meaningless in whatever you're doing. And Phil, I just want to ask you, right, you know, while you're talking about being a coach and mentor, that do you have mentors of yours?
Oh, definitely.
You have, right? And what's the best piece of advice you ever received from your mentor?
Great question. So, yes, I have mentors. I think it's really important that everybody has a mentor. I think it's quite arrogant if you don't have a mentor, because that would suggest that there is no area or aspect of your life that needs any improvement. And that's nonsense. You know, we can always be doing better. There's always something we can do. You know, I have mentors in my life who are for business. I have mentors in my life who are for family. I have mentors in my life who are spiritual mentors. So I have mentors of all different types. I mean, I have a spiritual advisor full-time in the business who helps me with the spiritual side of what I do. And that's okay. It's probably one of the most important people I have on staff. You know, I see her 3-4 times a week. We're constantly exchanging messages back and forth. So there's a lot. I think there's probably two bits of advice, and I can't decide which one's the best. Okay. And funnily enough, I've actually shared both of them today. So one of them is make more decisions with your heart and less with your head.
Okay.
That was one of them. And then the other one was what's the easiest route to money?
Oh,
and
yes.
I'll tell you why that's an important one. That quote originally started out as what's the fastest route to money? But the difference between those two questions, fastest and easiest, is this. Fastest was often me working 12 to 14 hour days, working hard to get projects done to get it across the line. That was the fastest.
Right.
The fastest way of making money is me just not to sleep ever and just to work like a machine and get stuff done. That was the fastest, right? The easiest is, well, what's the easiest route to money? How can I delegate this to my team? Who can I hire to empower? Who can I partner with to create a great synergistic thing that really helps people, but it's really easy for me because I'm not doing all the work?
Mm-hmm.
So fastest route to money and easiest route to money come up with very different answers. But I think the idea behind what he was doing at that point wasn't trying to get me to think that deeply about it, is my honest answer. I think the reason he said that to me was because I was so busy doing things that didn't make money. I was like, let's go on social media. Let's start going Instagram. Let's post pictures. I know what I should do. I should spend 3 hours a day responding to messages on LinkedIn. And it's like, whoa. What's the fastest route to money? And the fastest route to money was not go and have a chat on LinkedIn or go and put some stuff on Instagram. It just wasn't, right? So that was what it started as. And then as it's evolved, it became I was working way too hard. And the question then changed into what is the easiest route to money? And that comes up with very different answers. But again, it keeps me focused on money-making activity, not just for me, but for my clients. I mean, and ultimately why they're hiring me, yes, they want to be number one in their industry. Yes, they want to be successful. But ultimately, the best way to monitor that is money and time. How much more money do they have? How much more available time and free time do they have? If both of those things are increasing, I'm doing a good job, which is why they have to be my focus.
Okay, nice. And, you know, let's switch gears a bit and go into the main focus of the interview. Mm-hmm. So, Phil, what are the first three things we should do to increase our visibility and profitability?
Good question. So when you actually said in the introduction was quite astute. So one of the things I talk about is a formula, which is visibility plus credibility equals profitability. So if you have visibility and no credibility, that's the type of person who you see them on stages all the time. You know, as you alluded to with your friend, like they're always talking, but they're broke, right? They're on TV, they're on stage, they're all over the place, but then you don't trust them. You're not going to give them any money, right? It's like, okay, I see them everywhere, but I'm not going to pay them. That's visibility without credibility. Credibility without visibility is what most business owners have, which is they get repeat business, they get referrals, they get customers who love them. Nobody knows that they exist.
Right.
So the customers who they do have love them, but nobody else knows that they exist. Nobody is looking for them and saying, ah, you're Rayson. I've heard about you. You're the person I need to work with. That's not happening. Right. So that's what happens when you have credibility without visibility. And to be truly profitable, you need both. So the credibility part is actually relatively easy. I mean, other than just giving some basic information and saying, do a good job. A lot of this comes down to, do you have a sexy referral scheme to keep people on the wheel of your business, but giving referrals to your business? Are you actually capturing the social proof? Think about your LinkedIn profile right now. Every customer that you've done a good job for over the past 12 months, have they left you a LinkedIn review? If the answer is no, then you have work to do. Right? So you run a podcast. Every guest that you've had on that has enjoyed being on the show and that has, you know, has really liked the way that you do this and given you attention, have they given you a recommendation or a video? If the answer is no, it's because you've not asked them to. And if you're not asking them to, then it's a massive wasted opportunity, because your website should be an entire page of all these big faces and names across the industry saying, I love Rayson and here's why. So if you're not doing that, you're letting credibility go. What you are hoping for is that people just guess, right? What if somebody comes across this episode and this is the only episode they ever come across? What then? They don't know all the additional credibility that you have. They don't know anything about you unless they can go and research you and see that credibility put in front of them. So you've got to be asking for reviews. And a great little tip for that, by the way, law of reciprocity is what helps this more than anything else in the world. If you give before you get, you're more likely to receive. So if you want a review from somebody, leave them a review and then ask them to return the favor. Don't just ask them for a review. If you want somebody to do a video for you, send them a video recommendation of you referring them and then ask them to return the favor. You are far, far more likely to get it than just by asking somebody cold. So a lot of you have the credibility. You're just not doing anything with it. Like, so your customers and your market don't know anything about it because you're not taking the time to cultivate that and actually create a really easy environment. I was listening to your interview earlier with a friend of mine. Actually, you interviewed Jason, Jason Barnard. He'll tell you it doesn't matter how good you are. It's how good Google says you are.
Yeah.
Correct. So if you're not collating this information so that Google has something to view about you, you can't be disappointed when your customers and your market don't know that you exist. So there's the credibility piece. Visibility. Visibility is all about getting clear on that list of 50. If anybody wants any help with that, get in touch with me. But getting clear on who those 50 right people are for you instead of the 5 million wrong people, and then starting to network with those people strategically. So I talk about the four P's. Here's a big tip for you. The four P's are purchasers, partners, promoters, platforms. Purchasers are pretty obvious. They're the people who buy your stuff. Right. Partners, in my world, they're called NCPs, non-competitive partners, who works with the same target audience that you do but delivers a different service or product. Promoters, who can promote you to more of the first two, like a super fan or whoever. The final one is platforms, stages, television, podcast, radio, talks, whatever. A platform that introduces you to more of the first three. If they are not one of the four P's, you should not be talking to them. Right? Okay. So when it comes to visibility, there are a ton of websites out there. Podmatch.com, owned by a friend of mine, Alex Sanfilippo. Matchmaker.fm, owned by another friend of mine, James Mulvaney. Podbooker.com, don't know who owns that, but I'm sure they're a cool person too. There's three podcasting sites that both have a free version and a premium version. You could sign up there onto those three sites right now, today, and in the next 2 days, line up 10 to 15 interviews in your industry that start giving you more visibility for free. Mm-hmm. There is no excuse for you to not be visible. Again, this comes down to where your focus goes, energy flows. And if you're not focused on letting people see you and see your credibility, you can't then be disappointed that you're your industry's best kept secret. This is, again, going back to what I said earlier, stop waiting to be discovered. That's not how this works. The people at the top of your industry are there because they have invited themselves there. Now, there's good news and bad news for you there. Number one is you're not currently doing that. That's the bad news. The good news is you can start today, right now. Like, you can finish this podcast interview and you can go to matchmaker.com, matchmaker.fm, podbooker.com, and podmatch.com and register for three accounts right now today and start getting podcast interviews and media interviews. You can go and register on sites like Event Raptor, who have a directory of speakers who look for events and exhibition speakers. You can go and do that right now. Right now, and instantly you're going to start getting more attention and more visibility for what you do. And if you repurpose that content and you ask for reviews and you ask for recommendations, you're also boosting your credibility at the same time. And guess what?
Right.
We've now increased your credibility. We've increased your visibility. So the natural outcome of that is increased profitability.
Yeah, true. And is that what you always mention, international credibility for domestic dominance?
International credibility for domestic dominance. Let me give an example of what that means, right? Let's say that you own a pizza joint in Chicago and you only serve pizzas to Chicago. So only the people who live around you will eat your pizzas. Well, how many pizza shops are there in Chicago? Like
plenty.
A thousand, maybe more, right? Probably more, right? So how do you get to number one in that thousand? international credibility for domestic dominance. If you are the person who's being interviewed as a chef on podcasts worldwide because you have the best pizza, if you are the person speaking at events worldwide because you have the best pizza, it doesn't matter that the rest of the world can't come and taste it because they're not in Chicago. It matters that you're going to repurpose that content, and out of those 1,000 pizza shops, you're the only one that can say, we've been recognized in this magazine, this podcast, this newspaper. We've been known in 15 countries worldwide that we are the best pizza in Chicago. Come try it out. So now you are dominating your local domestic market. So that is what I mean by international credibility and domestic dominance. Let me give you another example. You write a book, right? And let's say you write a business book and you only sell to North America. That's all you sell to. You only sell to the US and Canada. So you're like, well, do I really need to talk to the rest of the world? Well, let me ask you this. You write a book and you get that little blue ribbon at the top of your book that says sold 1 million copies worldwide. So you are now a best-selling author and you've sold 1 million copies worldwide. Did it matter that you sold each of those copies for 10 cents to India and Pakistan? No. It still says 1 million copies sold worldwide. Every event that you go to, every podcast that you appear on, every stage that you appear on, every person that you're introduced to, you are introduced as, this is Rayson. He's the best-selling author having sold 1 million copies worldwide. That instantly gives you huge credibility to dominate your domestic market, but it came from international credibility.
Okay. Wow, this makes sense. Okay, I understand. Wow, love it, man. This is something that I believe, you know, probably the Legacy Show has international credibility for domestic dominance in a sense, because you guys are a part of it. You know, not just you, but Vinny, Jason Barnard, and Alex will be coming soon as well. Great. And
he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, I enjoyed, you know, having back and forth convo with him on Podmatch as well.
He's currently WhatsApping me like as we speak right now. Like on my other screen, he's sending me messages. So Alex has become a friend over the last few years, and we have a lot of banter between the two of us. So he's a fun guy. You'll have a lot of fun with Alex. I won't even torment him on the show, I promise you. You'll have a lot of fun with him. He's a really fun guy. But again, you are right. It's international credibility for domestic dominance. I don't care if you only serve customers in a 20-mile radius. Being known globally for how great you are still helps you win more customers in that 20-mile radius, provided you know how to use it.
True. And I just want to ask you, right, because our podcast is actually talking about profitable networking.
Yeah.
So can you tell us why is profitable networking so key to business success?
Have you ever heard the saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know?
Yep, I have.
It's not true. It's both. Oh. It's not what you know, but who you know. It's what you know combined with who you know. Because if you know something and don't know anybody, you are your industry's best kept secret and you are going broke. If you know the right people, but you don't know anything, you are a massive wasted opportunity because you know the right people, but you don't know what to do with it because you don't know anything.
Okay, understand. So in essence, it's like you if you say that, you know, oh, I have 5 millionaire friends and the next moment I'll be the next one, actually it doesn't make sense because you don't know what you want and you do not know what.
It's a great example.
So great at, right?
And then let's say you work in a factory and you're putting stuff in boxes and you have 5 millionaire friends. You're not going to become a millionaire because you don't know anything. You're just putting stuff in boxes, right? But if you run a small business and you have 5 millionaire friends, well, now you're going to learn how they grew their businesses to become millionaires. That's going to help your business. So you're going to be beneficial. So it's combining what you know with who you know. Meanwhile, if you run a small business, but you don't know those 5 millionaires, you can't learn from them, which means that you always just stay a small business. So it's about combining what you know and who you know. So I actually run an event called Profitable Networking Monthly where we bring people together for free. And there's no pitching allowed. That's not why we're there. What we're there for is learning and earning. We are there to create partnerships. We're there to find mentors. We're there to learn from each other. We're there to share best practice. Because what has happened is school and the education system worldwide has failed the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur, because it teaches you to be a worker, and it also teaches you that there are certain rules that you have to follow for the rest of your life. And let me just give you two of them, right? I actually mentioned this in my book that's coming out. There's two of them, right? Rule number one, you have to get straight A's across the board. You have to get an A in every subject. That is such nonsense in business. In business, what that results in is business owners trying to wear every hat. They're trying to be sales, delivery, marketing, update the website, do the sales, do the tax returns. They're trying to be everything. It's not possible. Yeah. Like, business is a team sport, and it doesn't, going back to football again, you can be the best striker in the world. If you're the only player on that pitch, you're going to lose. Because you can't be the defender, the goalkeeper, the winger, the midfielder, the striker all at the same time. But if you recognize that you are the best striker, you now know that you need to partner and hire defenders, a goalkeeper, the wingers to put the ball into you so that you can focus on your superpower. But how do you learn that? You learn that through networking with the right people. You learn that by saying, hey, you're a striker as well. You're much further ahead in business than I am. How are you scoring so many goals? And they go, oh, I partnered with these two wingers and it was great. It's like, great. Can you introduce me to people like that? Because that would be really helpful for me. Yeah, of course I can. No problem. Which brings me on to my second point, right? So business, school teaches you get straight A's across the board. Business, right. I would fail every other class except one, and that makes me a multimillionaire. So already we're in the wrong thing. If school wanted to teach entrepreneurs, your grade card of those subjects would be spread across five different people. You would build a team and you'd say, hey, you're great at maths and science. You go do those. I'm great at sports and drama. I'm doing these ones. You kick ass at English and music. So that's your one. And then at the end of the year, we're going to hand that grade card in. We're going to get A stars across the board because we've each played to our superpower. That should not be one person. That's nonsense.
Yeah, true.
Right? I mean, so it's setting people up for failure, right? Here's the second point. The second point about school is, let's say you're not very good at maths. Right. And you're in a maths clam, or worse still, you're in a maths exam and the friend sat next to you is a maths genius. Right. Mm-hmm. If I turn to that person and say, hey, what did you get for number two? Right. And they tell me the answer, I get expelled. I get kicked out for cheating. If it's in class, I get detention. So I'm getting punished for that. In business, that's the only way to succeed. Is to ask people who've already achieved it, hey, how did you do this? Like, I'm trying to figure it out and I'm not very good at maths. Like, how did you get number two? And they go, oh, it's really easy. Just do this, this, this. Here's the number. No problem. Take it. That sets you up for success. Whereas if you follow the rule that school taught you about, you can't cheat, you can't ask, you have to figure it all out yourself. That's what so many business owners are trying to do. They're sat going, oh, no, how do I do this? Like, I don't know what I'm doing with this. I speak to people all the time and they're like, oh, I haven't figured out my lead generation system yet. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, you do realize if you just asked me in 10 minutes, I could have given you a lead generation system that's going to make you $1 million and you can plug it in right now. Like, why are you sat trying to work out something that you don't know? That makes no sense. You're trying to figure out an answer to something that you don't have an answer for. Ask somebody who does. So networking for me and profitable networking is all about that. It's not about me pitching. It's not about me selling. It's about me saying, here's what I'm good at and here's my superpower. Here's what I'm weak at and where I need some help. Who needs my superpower support that can help me with my weakness? That's what networking and profitable networking is all about, because then both businesses are growing. People are helping each other. It's law of reciprocity. It's achieving what people need to achieve. And everybody moves one, two, three, four, five steps further forward. And each step could be saving you months, if not years of time, and thousands, if not tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars just by asking the right people the right questions.
Yeah. Well, love it. I agree with you, man. You need to know what to ask and who to ask, or else when you do not know who to ask, then you won't get your answers, in a sense.
It's also that most people want to just show off what they're good at, right? Mm-hmm. So they only want to show you the good bits. They don't want to show you the crap that's in the corner, like piled in boxes that they're trying to hide with a blanket. They don't want to show you that. Whereas the way that you grow in business is by being confident enough to say, hey, look, this bit's really good because I'm good at this bit. But like, I've got a load of boxes in the corner with my tax returns because I don't know what the hell I'm doing with that. Does anyone know what I should do with that? Mm-hmm. Because that's how you get growth. You don't get growth by just saying, hey, look at me, I'm great. You get growth by saying, here's what I'm good at and can help you, but I need someone who can help me with that thing that I'm not good at. And the first step for all of that is understanding your superpower.
Right.
Because if you don't understand your superpower, you're never going to know who you're supposed to network with and who you're supposed to learn and earn with. Never.
True. And I would like to ask you, right, are there any golden tips that you that can help grow businesses and increase revenue and celebrity status for the audience that's listening and tuning in right now?
Well, the easiest one kind of touches on something I said earlier, which is invite yourself. Get clear on that 50 list and start networking with them. Start meeting those people. Start putting yourself out there. You know, please, if you take nothing else away from this interview, stop waiting to be discovered. You are not going to be invited to the cool kids table. You are going to invite yourself. So if you're not paying someone a lot of money to do it for you or strategically networking your way there, you aren't going to achieve it. But the good news is if you pay someone to do it or you strategically start networking your way there, you are going to invite yourself to the cool kids table.
Okay, understand. Well, thank you so much for so many golden nuggets and value bombs that you've dropped here.
You're welcome.
You know, as we are coming to the end of the podcast, I have one last question for you. Mm-hmm. And that is this. Imagine this. You suddenly lose everything, Phil. Your money, your name, your reputation. What will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
I would network.
Okay.
I would make a list of the people that I need to know to get back to the top, and I would start to meet those people.
Okay.
So I would probably, sounds weird, but I would probably start a podcast. I would probably start a podcast and invite each of the 50 people that I need to know onto that podcast. Because even if only 5 of them turn up and say yes, I've still moved 5 big steps further forward.
True. Okay. Oh, interesting. Oh, that's a good answer, man. I mean, you know, starting your own podcast again and getting to know who are the 50 people to meet and to invite them on the podcast, that's a brilliant idea, which I would say that, you know, probably not many people would have think of. They would have thought of like, oh, I'll go back and sleep, I'll go work, and then after that I'll come back, again.
This is what I do because, you know, one of the things I heard from a mentor of mine many years ago is that successful people repeat successful actions. And these actions have been the most successful for me. The reason that we now have multiple millions of dollars as a business and in the bank is because I've networked with the right people. The reason that we are at the top of our industry is because we've invited ourselves there using this formula. So if we were to start all over again tomorrow and we were to lose everything, all the money's gone, all the reputation's gone, I would do the exact same thing again because it's what gets me here. It's going back to what I mentioned earlier, isn't it? About when you see a multimillionaire and they go bust and then 6 months later, they're back at the top again. And you think, how did they do that? They just went bust. They did that because they repeated successful actions. They took the same actions again to get them back to the top, except now they're going to make a different decision when it comes time to where they made that last mistake. So I would instantly, and you know what's fun? I didn't know about that 50 thing when I first started. I knew networking was important. I also didn't know inviting myself to the top of the industry was possible, never mind that it was achievable. I didn't know that. So now I'm much better equipped. So I will get to the top. If in your scenario, all the money's gone, start again tomorrow, I would be back at the top within a year because I'd follow the formula.
Wow, nice. Wow, love it. Well, with that, you know, I'd like to thank you, Phil, for so much wisdom and golden nuggets that you've dropped over here. Damn, love it. Man, I really love our whole conversation. It feels so natural. It feels so great, like as if, you know, we are like, I would say we know one another like 10 years or more already.
It's fun, right?
with just one conversation like this. And well, and I just want to ask you, like, where can my audience find you on social media or your website? Can you share it with us over here?
Yeah, of course. Well, firstly, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun. Oh, I agree. It's been really, really great. I do have one question for you before we go, but let me give you the details. So there's probably two places you can go. One of them is definitely go check out my LinkedIn. It's a good place to follow me. It's where we put a lot of our content. It's where we share what's coming up, talks, television opportunities, that kind of stuff. So it's a fun place. Plus, if you want to come to Profitable Networking Monthly, which is our free networking event, that's where I advertise it. So I would definitely recommend coming and checking out LinkedIn.
All right.
If you want to take my superhero quiz, it's completely for free. If you go to www.theunderdogchampion.org, theunderdogchampion.org, you will find a free superhero quiz. It will tell you your personality type. It will tell you the kind of things that you're likely to be good at, the areas where you're likely to be weak, and give you some ideas as to who, where you need to focus and who you need to be partnering with. So that could be an interesting place for you to go. You're welcome to do that. If you want to either stick it in the chat or whatever, or if you can't find it, drop me a message and I'll send you a link to it. But Rayson, before we go, I wanted to ask you, what was the biggest aha moment from you for the interview today? What's that one big takeaway that you're taking away from this interview?
Well, there are so many takeaways, but one of the biggest is to know the 50 people that are the right ones, and it's better to know these people than the 5 million wrong ones. I find that this is really, really good, and it sticks in my head a lot of time, because it just coincides with what Ray Higdon has told me, what he learned from Grant Cardone, which is best known is better than the best. Correct. And when I heard it, I was like, okay. Now I know why, and Grant is like the best known. You are the best known in your industry as well. Gary V is best known in his industry, and so many of you, like even when I got Steve Seams onto my podcast, it was like amazing. And when I got all these people start to ask me, hey, how do you get to know this guy, and how do you get to know all these people? Yeah. And I was like, hey, when you know all these people, you know you are at the right, on the right track, because that's when they will start to refer people to you.
Not just
my podcast has been booming because of all these people that have been referred to me, but also at the same time, I made a lot of good friends out of this podcast as well. And probably I would say that, you know, my friendship with you, with Podmatch, with Vini, Alex, and all this will grow and blossom as the days go by.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah. So this is something that I really enjoyed doing, and this is what I love from, and what I learned from you as well, which is really mind blowing and something that is okay.
That light bulb moment. Here. I get it. I love that. Yeah. I love that's what you've taken away from it. And you'll probably notice as well, and I imagine your listeners and your audience have noticed too, a lot of these people who are at the top of the industry that you're talking about, we all know each other, because we hang out with other people like us. Like, the people at the top of the industry want to hang out with people at the top of the industry. It's the cool kids table in school all over again. So once you know two, three, four of those people, they're going to introduce you to 5, 6, 10 of those people. And now, here's the thing. When you know 10 people at the cool kids table, it's now impossible for the audience to know, wait, is he like an imposter at that table, or is he one of them? Because if you're hanging around with 10 people at the top of their industry, the assumption is that you're also top of your industry.
Yeah, totally.
First there is the assumption, which is well, he must be because he's hanging out with them. Then comes the reality, which is because you're hanging out with them, you learn the things that get you to the top of your industry. So just as it was with me, where somebody introduced me as number one in the world before I was, and now we're number one in the world for the past 6 years, it's going to be exactly the same for you. People will see you as top of the industry because of who you're hanging around with. And then whilst hanging around with those people, you learn how to be top of your industry.
Well, yeah, it all links. It all links.
It's really simple, right?
Right. Wow. Wow. Thank you so much, man. I really love this part as well. And wow, it's really, really amazing. And it's really refreshing as well when get all these inputs from you, from anyone that has appeared. And but of course, for tonight, this is really amazing. This is a great conversation that we had. Great. And I'm really looking forward to have you again on my podcast to talk about a lot of other things that we can discuss on. And with that, I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in on the Legacy Show. Thank you so much for those of you who are tuning in, be it you're tuning it live or you're tuning it later on the replay or Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and any major podcast platforms that we are on. I would love you to actually share what you have learned in the comment section or in the reviews as well, and I'll be great to let Phil know about it. Like how other people, other guests have actually received a lot of feedback from my audience as well.
Love it.
So you guys stay tuned for the next Legacy Show, which is coming to you live again next week. And voila, you have a great week ahead and take care and stay blessed. Okay, bye-bye. See you. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Legacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called the Legacy Show Family, so you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. Alright, so with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of the Legacy Show.